Welcome to the A-News Podcast. This is episode 59 for April 13th, 2018. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week. It's designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism at our email address, podcast@anarchistnews.org. For more information and usually some good commentary, go to the non-sectarian anarchistnews.org. Editorial. This is what aging looks like, or trials of the socially awkward. At the risk of getting too personal, I thought this week I'd talk about the experience of aging in the milieu. The catalyst for this piece is hugs and pronouns. I just started meeting with a group of people, some of whom don't know me at all, and some only barely, and almost all of whom are significantly younger than I am. This has introduced me to two practices that are used in ways new to me. The first is a kind of hug. We could call it the greeting hug. And the second is the name and preferred pronouns greeting. As I watched people hugging each other as they came into the room, I started questioning my own hugs. My tendency has been to hug people as part of and a marker for sincere affection. But if the tendency now is to hug as a hello, then perhaps my hugs, a bit longer and more earnest than those I was watching, come across as flirting or just confusing to people. Confusing is not necessarily bad, I just like to appreciate it when I'm doing it. There is some limited similarity here to people changing from introducing themselves with Mr., Miss., Mrs., etc., and now going entirely by first names. The markers for intimacy have shifted, and maybe I'm not keeping up. Then I potentially did a faux pas about pronouns. By trying to say that I didn't care what pronouns people used for me, and instead shorthanding that to me not caring about pronouns at all. One could argue that this was less about aging and more about expecting that people will assume my good intent around a touchy subject. But that expectation, in fact, seems very related to aging inside a scene. The expectation that people will know enough about me to read me in good faith, when in fact, around touchy subjects, people are expecting to be irritated slash offended, especially by people who they don't know. And of course, that set me off on a road of how aging shows up in other ways. One big one that continues to be obnoxious is dealing with repetition of patterns of behavior. When you've been around for years, you see generations of similar behavior. For example, the easier and earlier one comes to anarchy, the easier and earlier one tends to leave anarchy. I can make educated guesses about someone who seems to get super excited about whatever is the last book they read, or someone who wants to talk about being serious and what serious people do. Seeing the patterns is one thing, but trying to communicate about those patterns to people who are in them is generally a fool's exercise. Interrupting someone's process, no matter how right I am, mostly just makes me a problem to them, rather than enabling them to shortcut an unpleasant and potentially unnecessary process. It is a hard-fought lesson, and one that I loathe, that the vast majority of the time, intervention merely places me in the terrain that is being negotiated. By trying to be a signpost on a hill, a perspective out of a particular morass, I am perceived instead as one more obstacle within the morass. A concrete and still irritating example, two anarchists I cared about were having increasingly severe conflicts in their relationship. They both asked me to mediate. I did, and they both decided soon after that I was horrible. To put it a slightly different way, the more I engage in people's actual lives, the harder I find it to avoid momness. Note, general statements about anarchists are always best measured against other groups with similar characteristics, and I'm not saying that aging among anarchists is different in kind from aging within other groups of mostly young, excited people. It's just, this is my group of young, excited people. There's tons more to say about aging in this context, but that's enough for now, I think. I will leave it up to the listener to decide if there's enough anarchy in this week's editorial. After all, perhaps nothing that is expressed through words could possibly be anarchist enough.
Yes, I'm cooking for my son and his wife. It's his 30th birthday. Pour berries into my bowl at the milk of 2 months ago. It's moldy, Mom, isn't it? I don't give a flying fuck, bro.
What's new this week? Belarusian anarchists, Lukashenko's political opponents, or criminals? From Belarus Digest, which appears to be a mainstream website promoting information about Belarus. This is more interesting than most mainstream pieces. While it's not sympathetic to anarchists, it is an assessment of how the state and other political actors deal with anarchists as outliers to the system. Quote, In some ways, anarchists supply a convenient enemy for the authorities, since they often break the law, giving the government an excuse to move against them. In 2017, members of the movement burned a billboard of the Ministry of Internal Affairs in a place that I cannot pronounce. Afterwards, three anarchists, 17, 19, and 21 years old, received 3 years of probation. Independent journalists and human rights activists devoted little attention to this trial because it held no political significance. But as Nastal Yolkas says, police used the burned billboard as a pretext for searches in other cities, which looked quite far-fetched. Unquote.
Not here to be loved from Insipidities, a website of DuPont, Frère DuPont. Those who like DuPont already will enjoy this. Those who have not yet read him will find this a more up-to-date introduction than the readings available from Species Being, etc. Bringing rigorous Marxism to British anarchist thinking, this is Reflections on Autonomy and Autonomous Zones, both working with and challenging to Hakim Bey's original suggestions. Quote, temporary autonomy is the conceptual repackaging of avant-garde happenings and situations on one side, as this combines with an inherited awareness of general insurrectionary activity amongst peasants and early proletarians on the other. The continuity within avant-garde traditions alongside the severance of this constrained activity from popular insurrection is historically conclusive. Autonomy, as a temporary suspension of business as usual, becomes both a compensatory activity, a sort of obligation to perform some sort of autonomous actions as the vehicle for delivering the impossible burden of creativity, taken to its most developed form, and also a swerve off the path towards revolutionary terror. Temporary autonomy is, after all, just playing. At least we did something. At least we tried to live, unquote.
Hamilton police lay charge on Lock Street vandalism. From the mainstream, the Hamilton Spectator, comes the bad yet entirely predictable news that the harassed Hamilton police have found someone to blame for the prol stroll of a couple weeks ago. How convenient for them that it's someone they already knew from previous protests and is publicly connected to the openly anarchist space in Hamilton, the Tower. While this article is hardly sympathetic, it did at least note that counter-protests for the businesses on Lock Street included, quote, far-right groups, unquote, like Soldiers of Odin.
June 11th, 2018, A Day Against Oblivion, from juneeleventh.noblogs.org, a call out for people to remember, celebrate, inform people about, and communicate with long-term anarchist prisoners, in particular, Marius Mason, who needs more mail, Jeremy Hammond, and I will add Sean Swain, who we last heard was on a hunger strike and isn't able to communicate with support people. Quote, while June 11th is only one day, it is a manifestation of the daily strength and fortitude of imprisoned comrades and the tireless behind-the-scenes work of those who support them. This often looks like visiting, writing, raising money, spreading information, and sharing their artwork, poems, and writings, unquote. Write Marius and Sean today.
Another day, another broken door. The Tower's statement on recent events. This statement is almost not necessary given the ease with which the official mainstream media pieces can be translated by anyone who's been around for a minute. It points out the flimsiness of the official charges, conspiracy is what the forces fall back on when they don't have a case, etc. This statement does, however, inform us as to the fucked up behavior of the cops, which allows us yet another scenario to prepare ourselves for, and reminds us that talking to the cops is never a good idea. Quote, those who weren't arrested were forced to wait outside for close to 5 hours while cops so-called searched the home. Similar to the fascists who attacked the Tower last month, the police thoroughly trashed the space and even messed with bookshelves. All three floors of the house were ripped apart, and many things were damaged, including a collection of framed feminist postcards that were broken into several pieces and thrown into the bathroom toilet. Police are misogynist, plain and simple, without exception. A long list of items were seized, including all electronics, phones, computers, cameras, external hard drives, etc., books, posters, zines, and a pretty random assortment of documents, academic journal articles, translated texts from a book project, handwritten notes, event programs, pamphlets, etc., unquote.
Eco-terrorism, a cry of desperation, from Medium, a mainstream website, by A.S. Roebuck, a, quote, new tribalist, anarcho-primitivist writer, and future revolutionary, unquote. Disconcertingly, this article, titled Eco-terrorism, mentions not the eco-extremists that most of us here at A-News would presumably expect in this era, but deep green resistance, Earth First, and Ted Kaye. The article itself seems shockingly naive to me, like a freshman's paper on the most radical groups the author has heard of in school. Quote, to conclude, these unilateral attacks that have been taken by eco-terrorists and will continue to take place against the techno-industrial system cannot be stopped by any form of natural law. The only method that will allow the violence to cease is the adaptation of the general public to the fact that this way of life will never be able to sustain itself and must be destroyed in favor of something that is not as harmful to the planet that we rely on, unquote.
Red and Black Party at the 2018 Labor Notes Conference from Black Rose Federation, an invitation to party with workerists. Quote, featuring music and conversation, updates from worker organizers and the struggles at Burgerville in Portland, which may become the first recognized fast food union in the U.S., the West Virginia teachers strike, and Amazon warehouse workers from Poland and London. Hashtag power from below, hashtag strike to win, unquote.
The eviction of hashtag ZAD from Act for Freedom Now, a brief invitation to help people keep track of what's going on in this eviction. Quote, at 3:22 a.m. yesterday morning, the cops arrived at the D-281 at Ardillière and Bois-Renault. The eviction of the ZAD occupation started. Today, the cops continued with the eviction at 4:02 a.m. If you want to contribute to our live blog, you can send your pictures, videos, reports, and analysis. Go to our submit page here. Click at the refresh button of your browser to get the latest information. You'll find the updates at the bottom of the page, unquote.
Support Hambach Resistance from Contra Info. Hambach Forest is in West Germany, nearly 12,000 years old, and only 10% of it remains. It has been occupied since 2012 by protesters against an open pit mine in the forest. This announcement is information deprived, but it seems to be for four solidarity events in various Italian cities. Perhaps there will be good report backs and people can do some events in the U.S. as well. Quote, Earth Riot invites you to a series of fundraising initiatives on the subject of Earth liberation, which aim to support those who every day oppose the dynamics of repression and domination typical of the capitalist system, unquote.
A call for intergalactic solidarity actions everywhere to end the destruction of the ZAD of Notre Dame de Lande from zadforever.blog. 50 years of occupation at the ZAD is right now being evicted. Quote, we are writing with the smell of tear gas rising from our fingers. The springtime symphony of birdsong is punctuated by the explosive echo of concussion grenades. Our eyes are watering, less from the gas than the sadness, because our friends' homes, barns, and organic farms are being destroyed. Bulldozers supported by 2,500 riot police, armored vehicles, helicopters, and drones are rampaging through these forests, pastures, and wetlands to crush the future we are building here onto the ZAD, the Zona Defender. We are calling on you to take solidarity actions everywhere. It could be holding demos at your local French embassy or consulate, or taking actions against any suitable symbol, corporate or otherwise, of France. And if you're not too far away, bring your disobedient bodies to join us on the zone. If the French government evicts the ZAD, it'll be like evicting hope. The French government announced that the airport project would be abandoned, but this incredible victory, won through a diversity of creative tactics, from petitions to direct action, legal challenges to sabotage, had a dark shadow. In the same breath that declared the abandonment came the announcement that the people occupying these 4,000 acres of liberated territory, the 300 of us living and farming in 80 different collectives, would be evicted because we dared not just to be against the airport, but its world as well. On day one, they destroyed some of the most beautiful cabins and barns, but yesterday we stopped the cops from getting to the Vrai Rouge, which happens to be where one of our negotiators with the government lives. Destroying the house of those that agreed to sit at the table with you was a strategic mistake. The fabulous ZAD press team used this as the media hook, and today we are winning the battle of the story. If enough people get to the zone over the next days, we could win the battle on the territory as well. We need rebel everything from cooks to medics, fighters to witnesses. We doubt this rural revolt will be finished before the weekend, when we are also calling people to come and rebuild en masse, unquote.
Lazad, Another End of the World is Possible, from CrimeThink. This is one of those patented high-quality CrimeThink news summary articles, this time on the situation and resistance at the ZAD. It includes 40 minutes of resistance video in French.
Support J20 Spring Trials. Next trial is April 17th, 2018, from defendj20resistance.org. A brief informational announcement includes 3 minutes of informative video. Quote, the J20 case has the potential to establish legal precedent for charging hundreds of protesters with felonies, particularly anarchists, the Black Lives Matter movement, and a range of groups targeted by national and local police. Please do what you can to raise awareness before the next trial group, starting April 17th, unquote.
Yanga, Los Angeles, a decentralized direct action May Day. By Contra Autoridad, a call to make May Day in LA an anarchist event and not a liberal spectacle. Quote, for many years now, we've allowed the politicians, nonprofits, liberals, co-opters, and authoritarians to make a show of our day, May Day. For too long, we've hidden away, choosing not to counter the liberals. And what has happened? The liberals have taken control. They take our names, our slogans, our energy as anti-authoritarian people, as indigenous people, as people of color, as queers, as troublemakers, and pacify it into a Hollywood image. Fuck that. No more bullshit. Unquote. Yanga refers to people indigenous to the area, for those who were wondering.
Margaret Kiljoy's Danielle Kane books are razor-sharp anarchist urban fantasies from mainstream culture site The Verge. This is a glowing review of two books by Kiljoy. Predictably, for a mainstream review, it mentions that there are anarchists involved, but the review is about the fiction, not the politics. Given that most anarchist fiction is more anarchist and less fiction, this is a good thing. Quote, so begins Margaret Kiljoy's novella, The Lamb Will Slaughter the Lion, the first of a pair of books that introduces a fantastic world of magic in America's decrepit heartland, featuring a band of genderqueer anarchist demon hunters. The two books are short, sharp, get straight to the point, and present a fantastic world that can be consumed in a single sitting. Unquote.
Madrid, Spain, a state agency under attack in the Vallecas neighborhood. From Act for Freedom Now, a brief communique. Quote, in the night between the 27th and 28th of February, the windows of an estate agency were smashed with hammers on Via Monte Igueldo. A message written in paint was left reading, War on Capitalist Speculation. The action should be seen within the current context of urban transformation in the neighborhood of Vallecas, carried out by capitalism and the state. Video surveillance, building speculation, police controls, racism, persecution of occupations, all behind the media campaign against, quote, drug smugglers, used as a Trojan horse to legitimize the changes in the neighborhood that the market and the state consider convenient, unquote.
Paris, France, Against All Forms of Power, from Act for Freedom Now, another brief communique. Quote, Rue de Terne, Paris, night of 27th March, diplomats' car set on fire. We oppose all states and all forms of nationalism, even the oppressed ones, because they will always be ready to become oppressors. The Turkish and jihadist aggression against Afrin is horrible, but this won't get us marching behind Kurdish nationalist flags, including municipalist libertarian banners. To nationalism, the collective, all parties, including imaginary, informal, or classist ones. We oppose direct action, individual or in small groups. A thought to the anarchists imprisoned by all the states. Solidarity with the comrades on trial in Italy following Operation Scriptomanent and with the comrades of the CCF in Greece. A thought to Crystal and the other person recently sent to jail following the eviction of the Lejeuc Wood in Bure, where people opposing a proposal to bury nuclear waste were chased out by the gendarmerie on 22nd February. And we're not forgetting Crumb. Keep strong, friend. Unquote.
The Apolistas playing the filth to the filth, from News of the Opposition. This is a translation of news about the ZAD and about an unsubstantiated accusation that Apolistas are also attacking ZAD protesters. Quote, they've done this kind of thing before, though less brutally. Gagged and bound a guy who'd burnt out a tractor, bundled him into a car boot, and left him in the middle of the woods. So most people are 99.99% sure that it was the Invisible Committee who's done this red fascist shit, unquote. Phrases like most people are 99.99% sure and red fascist ring warning bells about this being internecine jacketing and or partisan storytelling. But from this far away, there's no way to gauge likelihood or truthfulness. So take it for what it's worth, as always.
Targeted evictions begin April 9th, ZAD, from ZAD Forever. A statement by the ZAD Assembly of Users, quote, "We denounce the double-dealing of the government, which announced it wants a peaceful and reasonable evolution of the situation while planning an eviction operation, which is moreover illegal. We can't accept that inhabitants who preserved the bocage will be evicted tomorrow. We can't accept that dwellings and spaces of activities, which have nurtured the experience of the ZAD and are necessary to its future, will be destroyed by a new police operation. We invite those who support the avenir of the ZAD to organize accordingly," unquote.
Reforming has done nothing. That's why I'm an anarchist. An interview with Benjamin Zephania. From Red Pepper, which calls itself the magazine at the heart of the movement, spicing up the left for over 20 years. This article talks some about this musician's experiences with cop violence in the UK, etc. Quote, "But they keep going on about reforming. Reforming does nothing. That's why I'm an anarchist. I really sincerely believe this. We will have a revolution in Britain one day," unquote. There's nothing here about what anarchist means, much less anarchist revolution, which makes me question how political this magazine really is.
French police clash with eco-activists as they clear abandoned airport site, from mainest of mainstream news source Reuters. The story doesn't have a lot to add to the previous stories, just a bit about things said by some police media liaisons.
Madrid. Antonio Murillo will always remain in our anarchist memory, from Contra Info. A very brief obituary for an anarchist who died before age 40.
Book fair dumps academy venue over military massacre links, from freedomnews.org.uk. So many minefields to negotiate for an anarchist book fair these days. Quote, "The Bristol Anarchist Book Fair 2018 has had to cancel the booking with our venue. As a result, the full-scale book fair has been postponed, and a smaller event will run on the same day at the Black Swan. The primary reason for this is that it has been brought to our attention that the Academy Trust, who manage City Academy, have a sponsorship deal with arms-selling dickheads Rolls-Royce. Rolls-Royce do very big business with the Turkish military, who are currently blasting the Kurdish region of Afrin in northern Syria to pieces," unquote.
The Tarnak Verdicts, from CrimeThink. Yet another example of what CrimeThink does best. This piece takes us back to the days of the Tarnak arrests, the subsequent revelation about informant Mark Kennedy, the Glenn Beck promotion of the book The Coming Insurrection, the beginning of Occupies, some of the reasons that the Invisible Committee is rejected by some European radicals, specifically that they talk to the media about their case, and other surrealities. Quote, "The judge attempted to go through the file in chronological order. She hastily pushed through the files on Mark Kennedy and the infamous trip of Julianne and Yael Dunleavy to New York City after Julianne openly mocked FBI reports about a network of worldwide anarchists, NWA. Even in France, NWA sounds like an acronym for a hip-hop band or wrestling federation. The defendants took the opportunity to hold forth on the history of hip-hop in the USA," unquote.
Left-wing anarchist terror cell is fiction, French judges rule, from the leftist magazine The Guardian. No byline. The Tarnak Eight, originally nine, are acquitted after 10 years of being on trial. Quote, "The notorious case known as the Tarnak Affair began in November 2008 when more than 100 French police officers swooped on the tiny rural village of Tarnak, arresting anti-capitalists who were living on a communal farm and running a village shop. In a vast media operation, the then right-wing government and French authorities alleged that the so-called Tarnak Nine were a cell of dangerous subversives intent on anarchist armed insurrection to overthrow the state. At the time, villagers and the accused denied the charges. Rights groups said the case was a misuse of anti-terrorism laws, and lawyers said the case was deliberately being manipulated to make the government look tough against a supposed enemy within," unquote.
Media. TFN Le Smashy Smash. From Submedia, 5 minutes plus a video. Back to the male announcer now that they got the patriarchy issue out of the way last week. 50-year anniversary of Paris 68, riot porn, the electoral situation in France, Still mildly amusing, lots of quick cuts, hip-hop and samples per usual, and violence against protesting French students.
Anarchist zines and pamphlets published in March 2018 from Sprout Distro. Mostly reprints available in PDF form and hard copy. Conflictual Wisdom, Anarchist Organizing and Solidarity in and Out of Mexican Prisons. J20 Arrests and Trials Explained, Permanent Suspension. This is an excerpt from The Unseen by Nanny Balestrini. Montreal Counter-Information, Issue 3. Pen and Pistol, which is two reprints, Letter to an Anarchist Galaxy, and The Sun Still Rises. To Be Bad, Issue 1. This is new from the Anarchist Feminist Caucus of the New York umbrella group, the Metropolitan Coordinating Council. A-Tubes for February 2018. There is No Unhappy Revolution by Marcello Tari. Anathema, March 2018. Conditions of Confinement, some journal entries by Casey Brezik, in prison for stabbing a governor. A Crime Called Freedom, Our Neighbors to the North, on prisons and resistance to them in Canada. Plain Words, Issue 5. Alakaya on an anarchista prisoner in Chile. Tamara Sol Vergara, Crime Thinks We Don't Need Gun Control, Bulletin of Kate Sharpley Library, 93 and 94.
Radical Lit Roundup from freedomnews.org.uk. This roundup is actually from Kate Sharpley Library and includes two history books from AK Press, one on a 19th century Christian socialist lawyer, the other on socialism and anarchism in Sheffield between 1874 and 1900. Also a book out of Black Cat Press on anarchists and syndicalists in the First World War, and, interesting to this reader, a translation from a Latvian publishing house on Peter the Painter, a possibly legendary illegalist figure from the early 1900s.
Avalanche, Issue 13, April 2018, Anarchist Correspondence. This announces the last issue of this journal. The contents include Switzerland, on the struggle against Basslergut and on insurrectionary practices. Germany, when concrete deserts become intelligent, smart control, and the technification of the city. Tunisia, what are we waiting for? Days and nights of revolt against misery. Quote, I'm not going to write down a list of my satisfactions and frustrations with this project. Everybody can think of their own, and they will be different. There is one crucial factor in this project, and that is the contributions about ongoing projects of struggle. To put it blunt, there are few, and not only received contributions, but also projects, specifically looking at autonomous struggles by anarchists aimed at intervening in their social surrounding with direct action and self-organizing. Lately, there has been a scarcity. This assessment, if it is shared, can be a starting point for a reflection, debate, and possibly new projects. But in the meantime, to keep Avalanche with its intentions going in such a context seems a misdirected effort. And so this will be the last issue of Avalanche, unquote.
Podcasts. Anarchy Radio, April 10th, 2018. An hour, same old.
How Kurds and Anarchists Came Together on March 24th from It's Going Down, an hour and 3 minutes. Interview with two members of NACA, a non-anarchist Kurdish group, and with two members of Demand Utopia, a Bukchinist group out of Olympia and Portland that is working with NACA. There are background sounds throughout the podcast, including loud squeaks and footsteps, which is disconcerting and humorigenic for those who are so inclined. Demand Utopia is fighting against co-optation by liberals and anti-social anarchists and is pro-electoral pragmatism. Fun.
Bad News, Angry Voices from Around the World, Episode 10, March 2018. Quote, words from A Radio Berlin about repression and torture of anarchists and anti-fascists in Russia. From Athens Radio Zones of Subversive Expression have updates from Greece covering resistance on the streets and in prisons. The final straw from Asheville in the U.S. brings us an interview with a participant in the recent 12-day teacher strike in West Virginia. 105 FM from the island of Lesbos comes with news from around the North Aegean, including resistance to repression against refugees. Dissident Island Radio in London tells us about an ongoing hunger strike at an immigration detention center and the opening of a squat for homeless people in central London. Radio Fragmata from Athens has news about fascist attacks in squats in Piraeus and Athens, as well as solidarity actions with a comrade currently on hunger strike in prison. Unquote.
Topic of the week. Money, money, money. What kind of exchange do you anticipate working in an anarchist situation? Is barter or trade the only option consistent with your principles? Or do you see a committee-run economy with currency, much as we have it now? Do any A-News readers believe in the power of cryptocurrency to bring about a better situation on the way to anarchy? Do local currencies have a place in your dreams? Do you have any experience with using one? If you could make a change to how people exchange things here and now, what would that change be? What is the best argument you've heard or made for why anarchists should work for economic instead of or along with social political change? What's the worst? So, what are your thoughts?
Well, I gotta say the first thing, for better and for worse, that comes up for me after reading this is my experiences with these egalitarian income sharing intentional communities or
Right. Yeah.
Because I've lived in a number of them. And like one that probably the listeners, readers would be most familiar with is Twin Oaks community in Virginia. And yeah, that's been around since the 60s, and it's a part of a whole federation, an actual formal official federation called the Federation of Egalitarian Communities, these different commune, income sharing communes all across the U.S. And yeah, I lived in Twin Oaks for 2.5 years and visited many times, you know, after, you know, ceasing to be a member. And for me, like, that totally, I love, like, just, like, the practicalness of how they relate to money, where it's just basically, if you're a member, your needs are already provided for, while at the same time, they do have an expectation that you work, but the work that they have is, like, for Twin Oaks specifically, with the businesses on site that they have. And so you're supposed to work a certain number of hours, and then, yeah, there's a whole, like, labor system that they have for that. But it's a weird thing, too. Also, like, in a way, I don't think they intended it to be so, but in a way, like, their labor system with the labor hours inadvertently becomes kind of a currency in itself about trading labor credit hours and stuff like that. So, and that, for me, you know, that I find that kind of icky. I prefer this whole, like what you said a few moments ago, actually, this whole not having relationships of exchange, you know?
Sure.
And with this topic of the week, the word exchange is like all over the place. And I don't really agree with that premise. You know, it's not something I want.
Well, it does tend to be that when people, you know, when you have a one-on-one anarchy conversation with somebody, it almost always begins with how would you replace, you know, how we understand getting stuff that you don't know how to make.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, and so, I mean, it's kind of weird. Like, so, like I said, like, for me, like, these egalitarian communes, you know, comes up, and I think of that right away. But, and then, like, my second thought, you know, so to speak, is that's not really what I want. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why I'm not living and working in a commune anymore. But I got to say, though, like, Twin Oaks and, you know, FEC communes out there, they have staying power, you know, like a lot of them started in the 60s and 70s and they're still around and, you know, new ones are popping up and there's still like some young, you know, go-getter kind of people that are out there starting new communes, even in like this one called the Point A. It's a project that they have that is about starting urban income sharing egalitarian communes. And, you know, that I find kind of exciting and interesting.
That would be the idea of six people living together, all of whom have different jobs, and they would actually just write their checks off to the group?
Yeah, yeah. Basically, like, in the urban situation, in a small-scale situation like that, yeah, like, they would basically have one bank account. So they would all, like, work their jobs or not, but, like, they'd be in regular communication with each other, and they'd work out, like, what are the needs, you know, who needs what, and who wants what, and who's able to do, you know, what amount of work and such.
And do most of these have a religious tradition behind them?
Oh, no. And that's a good thing about the FEC, your Federation of Egalitarian Communities, is, like, yeah, it's all secular communes. Because if you're going to go into the religious realm, there's a lot more that are like that.
But in the context of a secular project, is the motivation, like, fairness? Like, I almost don't, like, the experiments I've seen of this have always been so small and kind of meager. And, you know, everybody has the same sort of shitty dishwashing level jobs. What does this look like if people are, I guess, not just in the service industry?
Yeah. Oh, so you're asking, like, what does it look like as what kind of work they do?
Well, I guess I'm mostly looking at, like, how do people... Like, I guess, where's the motivation? You know, the classic criticism of communists, right, is that there's no motivation to work harder or whatever. Does that sort of a thing come in?
Well, I mean, I would say, like, the motivation that people have for joining is about living a different kind of life, like a radically different lifestyle, like, you know, exiting Babylon and kind of, like, creating the whole new world within the shell of the old kind of thing.
And that's because you're having to talk through all of your economic decisions with a group of people who you're not necessarily family related to.
Yeah, exactly. And it definitely gets more complicated the bigger the commune, you know, like Twin Oaks and another one called East Wind in Missouri. Like, they're both like around 100 people.
But they're also both centered around some sort of product that they're creating, right? Whether it's a nut butter or a hammock.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You know their businesses. Yeah.
There I do.
You
go.
Yeah, but like, and the smaller ones are not as much focused around their, I don't know. I mean, like another one, for example, that's close to Twin Oaks called Acorn. And for a while, they even called themselves anarchists. You know, it was on their website, the A word. Hmm. And their product is a seed exchange business, you know, selling the seeds and stuff and shipping them out. But
I mean, all these businesses are almost as bleak as trying to sell books.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, the Acorn people, like, they can really get off on, like, saying that they have the right livelihood, you know, because it's all about seeds and plants and growing and all that that's organic and what have you. But, yeah, I mean, so it's kind of a weird thing because it's a commune, it's communist, you can call it that.
Sure.
But at the same time, they're running a business. I mean, yeah, you can't, like, dodge around the fact that much that you're, like, actually... You're engaged with the capitalist system. You're not like cutting off from it. You're a business competing with other businesses. And one thing, also an interesting thing about Twin Oaks, when I lived there, their main source of income was making the hammocks and selling it to Pier 1 Imports.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Yeah, and they were like the hammock maker for Pier 1 Imports. And then they had like all the eggs in one basket because Pier 1 then cut them off and said, you know, we don't want your hammocks anymore. And so Twin Oaks had to scramble to like find other businesses and sources of income to survive.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
So let's get back to the heart of the question. I guess the reason that I brought you into this conversation in the first place is because you're one of the few people that I know that have sort of been, you know, even if your interest hasn't been economic, you have been playing around with all the different sort of perspectives on economic relations more so than many other anarchists. I mean, the last 5 years or so, you've been associating with people that would more or less call themselves anarcho-capitalists.
Yeah, yeah.
Does their worldview differ, I guess, from the Twin Oaks and more intentional community type people?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's radically, diametrically opposed. Yeah, totally. In fact, you even remind me, like, at one point when I was living at Twin Oaks, I had a girlfriend that was a regular anarchist person, and then she became an anarcho-capitalist, and then she couldn't, you know, live at Twin Oaks anymore because, like, she saw, like, Twin Oaks as being totally opposed and at odds with, like, this anarcho-capitalist ideas. No, I would say, like, anarcho-capitalism, basically, it's in some sense, it's radical, right? It's anti-state. You could call it anarchist if you would say the bare minimum definition is anti-state, right? Mm-hmm. But in another sense, they're totally mainstream because a lot of these people I know, like, they don't have any real substantial problem with their jobs or being a consumer, you know, or spending money or like the whole, like, where they find themselves in the world economically. If they're rich or poor, it doesn't matter. Like, they just think, oh, it makes sense. It's fair. Yeah. But, and I would say in a way, like, one thing for regular kind of anti-capitalist anarchists, I notice is like, an underlining current that unites a lot of them is this visceral sense of, I hate having to work, you know? I hate having to get some kind of stupid job or some stupid business or something.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're saying that the quote-unquote ANCAPs that you know who don't have that perspective at all.
not, well, a lot of them like have dreams and aspirations that fail or probably will fail of creating their own business, you know. A lot of them want to be entrepreneurs and, you know, specifically like the agorists, they're all about black market business. They don't necessarily do it, but they aspire to, you know. they want to be great entrepreneur business leaders, you know.
And so I guess, are you familiar with their arguments around cryptocurrency? Because the agorists are the ones who are the most into crypto, right?
Yeah. And I was kind of surprised to see like cryptocurrency be part of the topic of the week, because I remember this being topic of the week before. But no, like a lot of the anarcho capitalists and agorists, they just love cryptocurrency and Bitcoin. And
what's their argument for why it's so disruptive?
Yeah, well, for them, like, it's all about not using state-based currency. Like, if you use a currency that's not made and monitored, you know, produced, circulated by the state. Now, their whole idea is to, like, get away from that and not be reliant upon state institutions and services, you know, wherever you may find them. You know, it can be from driver's licenses and marriage licenses to, you know, currency and schools and what have you.
I mean, agorists in particular are also illegalists. Isn't that true?
No, I mean, I would define like illegalists as being about like basically stealing, you know, and agorists as being about like not using like above board, legit, you know, monitored, registered, licensed, you know, business practices. So agorists would be like avoiding all that. And so definitely like illegalists and agorists can be friends. Like, for example, if you have stolen goods and you need to pawn it off in a black market, then the agorist can hook you up in that sense.
Oh, that's funny. Have you ever had an engagement with a local currency?
I mean, like I said earlier, there's the Twin Oaks labor credit system, and you can call that a local currency. But beyond that, no, I haven't. No, I'd also would say, yeah, the FEC, too, also has a system of using the labor credit hours with other communes that are part of the FEC.
Oh, that's cool.
So that's kind of like a alternative currency as well.
Although you mostly can just buy peanut butter.
No, I mean, it depends, like... from what I hear, like, people are using these labor credits in all kinds of dubious ways. So, like, yeah, you could, use it for anything, you know.
Okay.
And it's not necessarily monitored, but that's not the intention. And so that's kind of like an unintended side effect for, like, this labor credit system that Twin Oaks and FEC created.
Hmm. Did bread exist when you lived in the Bay Area?
Did what exist?
The local currency in Berkeley.
Oh, no. But in the Bay Area, one thing, when I lived there, also speaking economically, like myself at the time and a lot of people I knew, and there's still a lot of people there that are this way as well, of this kind of dropout, you know, gutter punk squatter kind of trying to like use little to no money in one's lifestyle.
Sure.
You know, and that is a way of relating to money as well. But that is the way that I see is totally unsustainable for people, because it basically, it's this kind of living in the margins really precariously. And, you know, when you get older and you have the needs of getting older, I don't see that as, you know, sustainable.
If you could make a change as to how people do exchange, what would it be?
In the way that people do exchange. I mean, well, like I said earlier, I'm not really into this idea of exchange per se. That's the thing.
So you're a maximalist, meaning you would like to dismantle exchange relationships, full stop, and there's no compromise until the day of days.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds really fun and sexy, yeah. But I think, so like that's the ideal, right? But like there's various levels of like incrementalness and, you know, compromise that I could go into. But then, in a way, like that's not as fun to think about things in that way.
Sure. Right?
Yeah, but like what I like though is kind of like all these things I mentioned, like agorism and the whole kind of Twin Oaks mentality of income sharing communes. And I just would, generally speaking, I just want more people to be experimenting or playing around with all kinds of new and different. Or, you know, bringing out the old ones and try those again, you know, different ways of relating to money and or currency or exchange, if you want to call it that. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for your time.
Oh, yeah, thanks for having me on. Everybody wanna rap but don't know how. Everybody wanna run when they hear that sound. Everybody think they hard till they face hit ground. Everybody make a choice, it is not profound. Either get money or die, get faded or die, get famous or die, get that stainless or die. Get your hands in the sky and get it between the eyes. Get money or die, get money or die. This trap life is deeper than...
This podcast is the effort of many people. This week the podcast was sound edited by Leno Mabel, written by Jackie, narrated by Chisel and a friend. The editorial was written by Chisel. We thank Aragorn and a friend for their help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, anarchist and anti-political books, pamphlets, and other materials are available at littleblackcart.com. And for news by and or about anarchists and up-to-the-minute commentary, go to anarchistnews.org. It's gonna be a homicide. Put your hands in my pocket. Lose a bus, a cap in a nigga like rocket. Colors. Gangbang capital. White House Dell got a horn in front of Capitol. Bitch, you playing domestic violence like Casey and Mary J. Listen to this hook from Clipping and have a nice day of shoes. Everybody wanna rap but don't know how. Everybody wanna run when they hear that sound. Everybody think they hard till they face hit ground. Everybody make a choice, it is not profound. Either get money or die, get faded or die, get famous or die, get that stainless or die, get your hands in the sky and get it between the eyes. Get money or die, get money or die. Bring it back, homie.